Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway. Coming to part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and powered by largemanappears.com. It's me, your troubadour upon Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I'm joined as I am each and every week by my faithful co-host. He's Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you?
I'm good. Good. Another late night recording. Well, not so late night recording for us this time.
No, it's like a whole 7 minutes earlier than we usually even start the call. So that's pretty good for us.
Maybe so, there won't be as many yawns this time for people to find out.
I was trying to think, like, what's the late? Like, we've definitely recorded till nearly 2 o'clock in the morning before.
Oh, 2 to 3. Pandemic times, I think we were going even later. Like,
yeah, well, we had nothing. Well, actually, I was going to say, we
had, you had nothing to do.
You were still in work. You had a grand total of, like, what, like a week and a half, 2 weeks off or something like that.
Oh, yeah, when everyone was getting furloughed, I got like a week and a half of kind of 3 days a week. But yeah.
Man, that was weird. Like, do you remember this used to be a weekly thing? This show, to keep our sanity and to keep our listeners' sanity during the pandemic?
Just think how far along we'd only be if it wasn't a weekly show.
Yeah, oh God, like, we really cut down on some time. Yeah. I know we did many, many silly non-canon shows during that period of time as well. True. But I've thought about that with a lot of podcasts I listen to. I was about to say favorite podcast, but it's probably very egotistical of me to assume that this would be a lot of people's favorite podcast. Mm. But I've definitely gone back, not intentionally to listen to pandemic era shows, but like some shows I listen to, I go back to an episode that just happened to take place in the pandemic. And I'd say a lot of them are really interesting. If you were to listen to us in like February 2020 and then listen to us, so when did I go back to work? Like April, end of April 2021, then is when I first got back in the office. I think it would be interesting to chart our descent into madness and alcoholism at the time, because that was like we had just started actively drinking on the show a few months before the pandemic even happened.
That 15 month period would probably be interesting to like you say, follow our slow creep into madness.
Could you imagine if we had the Patreon then and we could have written off all that? Because remember, we were getting the craft beer boxes delivered to our houses at that stage.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that the pandemic cured me of, was wanting to try different kinds of beers.
even you don't do it anymore. Yeah.
No, like the odd time I'll have like a tipple on the show, but we won't like do a Beers of Thunder feature on it anymore. No. But I don't really drink beer at all now. I will have Guinness like when I'm out. And then, like, still on the whiskey. Don't worry, guys. We haven't completely changed. We're still faithful to the old water of life. But that really, having to like batch order like 20 beers at a time, so that I always had a mad selection, that I was always doing a different beer. I don't think I repeated beers very often for a while, except I remember I went into that phase where I was into those Franciscan Well red red ales for a while. That was the thing that was the most I repeated myself. But yeah, anyway, like, look at us fondly reminiscing on our borderline alcohol problems.
Well, you know, recently in our Discord, in you know, on the VW Discord, our page.
Well, not so recently by the time people already listen to this.
there was a new listener who discovered us and went back and went through the whole archives again. And I was like, oh.
Oh, wow.
That had to be interesting.
Do you know what? For them, it's probably a good time to have done that because, like, as he was doing it, the show was still on hiatus.
Yeah. So that they actually did say that, you know, it was probably a good time to discover the show because.
Yeah. No, we did it for that listener. So if anybody has any complaints about we took so long off, you could direct your complaints to the Discord.
No, there you go. They say they found a podcast in September and they just caught up with the free and paid feed.
Ooh.
So it's a real fan, not like all those freeloaders.
Oh my God. The king of capitalism, Lee Malone, strikes again.
Yes, and I got mouths to feed.
You got kids, you need this job, as has been said. Let's get into WCW straight away, shall we? And I think this is going to be an interesting week. There's a couple of bits in the Observer, but we won't get into it here, but just in loose talk you and I were having, it seems like we're going to divert slightly on a couple of segments for once, where we're usually almost completely lockstep in a lot of things, except when continuity contrary Malone logs on. It feels like maybe there's a couple of segments this week that you and I really differ on the quality of, so I'm looking forward to that discussion. But let's talk about what's happening in March of 2000 at this stage in the Observer. And the worm has turned in terms of Vince's thoughts on Beyond the Mat.
I was just going to say, Scotty thought he turned in the year 2000.
Hey. So obviously we've been charting how Beyond the Mat has like had film festival releases. It's come out, getting rave reviews. Obviously it doesn't paint the most favorable portrait of the World Wrestling Federation, nor its owner. And now Vince is on the attack, basically. So the controversy over the movie Beyond the Mat grew this past week when pressure tactics from the WWF caused the USA Network, UPN, and Chris Craft Communications to ban any and all advertising on their programs for the film. While some were surprised at the lengths Vince McMahon would go to and attempt to bury the movie, I don't know why anyone
would be surprised in the year 2000.
It has been clear for some time by anyone who understands the with us or against us and no in-between philosophy of McMahon that he felt the movie wasn't with us. If he had felt the power to pressure entire networks, or if he felt he had the power to pressure entire networks into not carrying commercials, of course he would. The surprise was that the network allowed him to exert that much influence as it regards advertising on non-wrestling programming. Which shows the surprising power within television of the WWF. Could you imagine now if Paul, all Paul, tried to turn to Netflix and tell them what to do?
Oh yeah, they can't advertise Ronda Rousey now because she's in the other place.
Could you imagine?
Yeah,
like it's not in a million years, especially like. Again, we're not going to kind of because we're recording out of sync with the. We're not up to date. I was reading a story today about how, would you believe the whisperings again about how unhappy the carriers of almost all WWE programming are with the ratings right now.
Mm-hmm. I saw similar.
Anyway, something that I thought was just interesting about this, like, so they had done the thing in the past where. So TNT and TBS won't air. There's a phone commercial at the moment that features Steve Austin and D'Lo Brown. And USA and UPN won't air the Spree commercial with Bill Goldberg in it. So that's not necessarily unusual. But the like we said, the exerting of power where non-wrestling programming is now not showing it on these networks is really interesting. The only known example of a network refusing to air commercials for a movie was NBC refusing to air commercials for Dirty Work. The star of the movie, Norm Macdonald, a former Saturday Night Live cast member who had been fired from the show by NBC Entertainment President Don Ohlmeyer for questionable language on a live broadcast. I don't know how well you know the story of being fired.
I don't know the story of him being fired. I know, you know, Norm's story in the sense, but I don't know how he was fired.
So an important thing you need to know is that the firing happened in the early to mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And to place exactly when it happened, I can tell you that one of Don Ohlmeyer's very good friends is one Orenthal James Simpson.
Okay.
And would you believe that Norm refused to stop doing jokes about OJ
yes, I would.
On Weekend Update?
Yeah.
Very famously was getting pressure to do it. Him and his writer, the head writer of Update at the time, was a guy called Jim Downey. There's actually a great documentary out on Peacock at the moment that's well worth checking out. If you can find it online, called Downey Wrote That. Downey is probably do you know who Jim Downey is that you might know because it broke Containment, even if you don't know comedy writers very well? Is you know the meme of Jeff Epstein, the New York financier?
Yeah,
that's a Jim Downey. That was Jim Downey on Conan's podcast. But anyway, Jim Downey, beloved comedy writer, one of the most like iconic writers of Saturday Night Live ever. Him and Norm were given the heave-ho because they would not stop doing jokes about OJ when the trial was happening and everything. Like, very famously, when the verdict came down in the trial, Norm opened a Weekend Update by saying, "Well, it's official. Murder is legal in the state of California."
God bless Norm.
there was no one like him. But it's just interesting that that is the one case of that ever having happened before. But it goes to show, right? So that was an NBC president who you're just like, okay, that guy has the power to say what happens on the air, what happens not on the air. It's crazy to think, like, it's just for maybe our younger listeners, just to give them, like, people think wrestling is big now. And in terms of, we've said this before, like, in terms of revenue, WWE have never been making more money than they're making now. There's never been more money to make in wrestling than there is now at the high level. You know, you'll see everywhere that, like, AEW are doing, like, as the number two, are doing financially better than any number two ever has. Sorry, Eric Bischoff, but it's true.
Any number one previously had.
Yeah, any number one apart from the current number one. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
But no, culturally and, you know, zeitgeisty, like, wrestling was never more important than the year 2000.
Yeah, yeah. It never had the pop culture cool vibe. Like, it had the being big in territories, being big in part of, you know, again, like, Crockett was huge in the territories.
Nationally, it was never.
Yeah. And people would have, like, with the exception of Hogan, do you know what I mean? Like, Hogan was obviously larger than life, larger than the industry. But, like, people would have a passing knowledge of people like Flair and Sting, maybe. Whereas, like, the household names were Macho Man because he's on the Slim Jim commercials, Hogan because, like, fucking Hogan in a fucking Rocky movie, as well as everything else. But in terms of, like, people knew, people watched, people kept up to date with, and crucially, multiple wrestlers would pass the airport test. Like, people would recognize, you know, your mom is going to know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is at this time, or who The Rock is. You know what I mean? Like, The Rock has built a fucking empire off him being the number two guy in this company at its peak. You know what I mean?
Just behind Triple H, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah. It just goes to show that, like, now, like, we kind of, a lot of people our age, Lee, would kind of balk at people saying, like, it's never been more culturally, like, the people really try to make fetch happen on that.
Yeah.
Because within the bubble of wrestling Twitter, it seems that way. There's definitely more people talking in online spaces about wrestling.
There's more noise.
Yeah. But it's never been watched by fewer people in history.
I love that there was a stat about it, like, somebody counted the name Ric Flair or Nature Boy is in, like, copious amounts of early 2000s rap songs because his gimmick connected with, you know, that scene, and they all want to be like the Nature Boy.
Go on. No, I was going to say, like, when I think about the couple of eras that I've talked about before where I nearly completely stopped watching wrestling, like, I think of that kind of right before the Nexus stuff, and then in between the Nexus stuff and the Punk, Summer of Punk, are the closest I ever came to, like, completely pack it in wrestling. And, like, but if you look at the viewership figures then, Netflix would crawl over broken glass to get those to get those viewership figures for Monday Night Raw, to have that culture. Like, it was much worse. Well, I don't know, actually, now that I think about it, I could still watch an episode of Raw then, whereas I find it completely unwatchable now. I'd say, what
I
I'd say
couldn't
is
watch Raw now.
maybe the
Jesus.
maybe the potential quality is much higher now in terms of, like, the level of wrestling competence amongst the hired staff should be much higher than it was then. However, it's never been
However,
more off-putting or less popular in the broader scheme of things. You've got the whale thing. Like, that's another thing, is like, you've got the there's way less people ever before watching wrestling now, but they're spending way more money, particularly on WWE. Do you know what I mean? There's the whole thing with the WrestleMania tickets this year. But look, again, we're off point on that. Anyway, more from the world of wrestling. We've got, I love dipping into these every month when they show up, but the polling the opinions, the tastes, the takes of the IATA
Oh, yes.
listenership for Wrestling Observer Live. So I won't talk about, because I don't know what other episodes were on, but the first question was, of the previous week, what was the best TV show? You'd be shocked to know that Thunder and Nitro both only pulled 3% in that 3%
Shocking.
each. Raw got 54%. The interesting thing, right? So, three questions that I think are interesting for just the future, like, what, how we know now things will play out, right? So, do you think the XFL will be a big success? 8%. Flop from the start? 18%. Make it eventually, but struggle at first? 19%. Never get off the ground? 27%. And open strong, but then fade? 28%. And I'd say
Oh,
those
open strong
two.
but fade is probably about right.
Yeah. It had, like, again, if you watch the ESPN, the 30 for 30 on
Oh, that's
XFL is
great.
fucking great.
Fucking brilliant.
But just phenomenal opening ratings, like, way better than a lot of industry people would have expected. And then it completely fucking, once people got a look at it, they realized they didn't like it. So fair play to the IATA listenership there. They were bang on. Do you think Mick Foley will return full time a few months down the line? 7%. Never wrestle another match? 11%. Wrestle only one more match? 20%. Or wrestle a few more matches sporadically? 62%. Fucking.
Look, it's hard to say you returned full time, but
No, but, like,
he
wrestle
did
a
a
few more
lot
matches
more than
sporadically is bang
sporadically.
on. Yeah.
He did a lot more than
Well, like,
sporadic.
he, like, I mean, in terms of wrestling, like, what, he wrestles one more match this year. And
Yeah,
then does
but I
he wrestle
mean,
another match before the Evolution match at WrestleMania 20? Like, does he wrestle again for 4 years? I don't think he does. Because the
maybe not.
Orton feud is after.
But he has, yeah, so he comes back in 2004.
Yeah. So he wrestles
He,
a bit in 2004, a bit in 2005, and then goes to TNA.
yeah, and he's full time in TNA.
As
And then
full time as that could be either.
he's back on. Well, no, he has the Flair feud. That's like a
Yeah.
good
Well, I
3 month
see,
stint.
because I'm actually curious now. I didn't do that. I'll do this now. We'll do some live inside baseball.
Also,
See how many matches he had since the Hell in a Cell.
he did wrestle in ROH.
You want to guess a number? How many matches? Now, this is, again, this is March, so the Hell in a Cell No Way Out has happened.
Okay, so March 2000 through the rest of his career, I'm going to say cage match has 90 plus matches.
It's not, but it's more than I thought.
Okay.
Let me just It is 47.
Okay. A little bit less than I thought.
Now, that's including, like, Royal Rumbles. So, what we have here is... I'll just go through the first few. We've obviously got McMahon in every corner. We'll always remember where we were then. Then he doesn't wrestle again for nearly 4 years. So, it's the Royal Rumble 2004. He's in that. Oh, is that how the thing starts? Does he take Orton out of that Rumble? Or Orton take him out? They interact in that Rumble, don't they?
When's the Backlash match?
It's after. It's the Backlash after the WrestleMania 20.
Okay.
So he comes back at the Rumble. The angle goes all the way to Mania and through Mania.
Yeah, he was supposed to face Orton in the December. He disappears from December through the Rumble. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So there's a random Chris Benoit, Mick Foley, Shawn Michaels, and Shelton versus Evolution match just before Backlash. There's the Backlash match. And if I gave you 100 guesses, you would not guess the next three matches. Or, you know, there's the next four matches, and then we'll... next five matches. I'm laughing at some of these, right? So, no. Three of them are outside WWE, but you will never guess who his first match back is a year later.
Oh, say a year post Backlash.
A year and a half post Backlash. So he goes
outside
from...
Outside WWE.
No. This is the inside WWE match.
Okay.
So he doesn't wrestle between Backlash... if for WWE, he doesn't wrestle between Backlash and Taboo Tuesday 2005.
Coachman.
Carlito.
Oh, fuck. What?
Yeah. But the other matches, I got to give you these, right? So yeah, his next match after Backlash, he wrestles a month later.
Okay.
I will tell you where and what it's for and see if you can guess the opponent. It is in Yokohama. It is for the Triple Crown.
Oh. What? Toyo KO.
It is Mick Foley being losing effort to Toshiaki Kawada.
That didn't happen. That's
at
fucking...
Hustle 3.
Oh my god.
Then we have at the Mark Curtis Memorial Reunion Show a year later. So this is, he goes from May 2004 nothing until May 2005. He wins the Tri-Cities Tag Team title.
Okay.
As him and the franchise, Shane Douglas, defeat Al Snow and D'Lo Brown.
That is a collection of men, yes.
Then in August of that year, the Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton, Dennis Condrey, and Stan Lane, defeat Mick Foley, Dory Funk, and Terry Funk at Wrestle Reunion 2.
Jesus.
And then I'll give you the one. So after the Carlito match, I just need to read out these names, right? He wrestles at Universal Uproar in the Coventry Sky Dome.
Oh. Let me think. Who did he...
It's a six-man tag is what I'll say.
Oh. I'm trying to think back. Who the fuck did he team on that show?
You're not going to guess... I would say at least two of them.
Go on, go for it.
Oh, sorry, it's an eight-man tag. Mick Foley, Paul Travell,
yeah,
Steve Corino, and the Sandman.
Jesus.
Defeat. Who's the... Okay, so 2005 England, who's the one person who's booking themselves in a match?
Alex Shane. Yeah, I knew Alex Shane would be an opponent.
Iceman.
Okay.
Martin Stone. And Styx.
Martin Stone of NXT fame.
Yes, indeed. Then there's nothing till the December the following month. Is this the Santa match? Because it's holiday with the troops. Mick Foley defeats JBL.
That'd have to be the Santa match, yeah.
He wrestles Carlito again on a house show in the Philippines in February. And then he's straight into the Edge feud.
Jesus Christ.
He had to, like, okay, we'll give you the Edge feud, but you have to suffer through two matches with Carlito first.
To be fair, they were probably the easiest matches of Foley's fucking career.
Back on to what's happening in the world of wrestling at the moment. Would you believe Sabu is done again with ECW?
Hang on, that was on the last show you said that.
Oh, well, no, this is, well, Dave is saying now, it now appears Sabu is done with the company again. And the next question is how everything will wind up. At the 3-4 ECW Arena show, Sabu was actually given a script, something Heyman never gives anyone, which called for a match in the arena where it would start out as Super Crazy versus CW Anderson. Sabu would interfere and put Anderson through a table, leading to Crazy getting the win. Cyrus would then order Crazy versus Sabu for the TV title tournament after Crazy seemingly had already beaten Anderson in this same first round to make the match, to make Crazy the big underdog, and Sabu would miss a table spot and Crazy would pin him after a moonsault. Sabu, who was dressed when he got the script, left the building with John Moore, aka Pee-wee, saying he wasn't going to do the job. It's pretty clear that Heyman knew ahead of time that Sabu would never put over Crazy because Sabu is stuck in that Ed Farhart mentality about doing jobs, and he feels he's done enough of them. Heyman claimed when they talked during the week, Sabu told him he wasn't going to do a job, which is why Heyman laid out a script basically to cover himself if and when this goes to court, and that Sabu told him he would be wrestling in Calgary on 3-3 and couldn't make connections back for the ECW Arena show. So Heyman also had to be figuring if the story would play out that way. Yeah, shocker.
Two fucking carnies trying to out-carny the other one.
Yeah, yeah. It's no surprise that it's ended in stalemate again.
Yeah. If only there was history between these two and stalemates.
Who could have possibly seen it coming? Like, yeah. Who? Not I. Wait till you hear this, right? The Super Brawl buy rate, we're over to WCW now. The Super Brawl buy rate is coming in at closer to 0.15 than 0.2, which is by far the lowest buy rate ever for one of the big two companies. In fact, it is lower than most ECW buy rates, considerably lower than AAA did in the range of what UWFI and K1
have been doing. Fucking hell.
And they have no television. The fact this was done with Hogan and Flair's first pay-per-view back after months speaks volumes that this company needs an entire facelift, and at this point they're better off biting the bullet for a while with quarterly pay-per-view shows that they spend 3 months building. I disagree with Dave here because I don't think I would trust WCW to build something for three months right now. Especially not with Vince Russo on his way back in the door.
Also, they're so obsessed with Monday nights that, you know, they couldn't possibly focus 3 months down the line.
Yeah, speaking of people like you're about to, Bischoff is about to come back in as like, what do you want to say, Russo's babysitter, and never has a man been more obsessed with popping ratings over everything else. To put things into perspective, WCW's estimated company gross on this event was $773,000, and that's barely more than WWF grossed for their Raw house show in Atlanta, and less than what WCW had grossed for a few of its biggest Nitros in the past. Even within the company, the feeling is Uncensored will do even worse, which I'm pretty sure they're spot on that estimation. Yeah. A couple of notes from backstage at this very Thunder we're about to talk about, and I will try to dance around spoilers being included in here, but I thought there was a couple of interesting things. Sid no-showed this show.
Oh, okay.
We will talk about it a little bit. The reason Ray was here is because, for some reason, you want to talk about the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing. They thought he could wrestle. They thought he was cleared.
What?
And he was able to work a little. And that's why they called him TV, not realizing he had reconstructive surgery and he's 3 months away from coming back.
Oh, this fucking company, man.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about what they should have done with Vampiro on this show, but we'll get into it. The Atlanta Journal Constitution on 3-3 ran a series of articles on WCW on the lawsuits filed by Sonny Ono, Hardbody Harrison, and Bobby Walker, on the declining ratings, and on the lawsuit Shane Douglas is threatening to file. There was nothing groundbreaking in these stories besides claiming discrimination. They were suing, claiming their independent contractor status was illegal, fucking playing the hits. And they were thus denied employee benefits such as vacation and sick time. Walker is still under contract at WCW, but complained that if it wasn't for racism, he could be babyface with a big push. Walker said he was told by management that there weren't enough black people watching wrestling to push me. He said, if that's true, it's only because there aren't enough black wrestlers for fans to follow. Alan Sharp claimed WCW demographics show that 87% of the audience is white, which is a higher percentage than the national average of 83%. Ono, who earned $160,000 for his role as manager, he earned far more in inside deals as a liaison with Japan and in negotiating contracts for foreign talent and getting a cut. Ono said he was upset with the pay disparity. The average WCW salary for a wrestler in during this period of time is $300,000.
Average.
He was more effective. Now, if you said that now about WWE, you'd be like, okay, fair.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, again, with the ballooning finances of that company. But this is a company that's hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
And the average wage is 300K. He was more offended that the Asians and Mexicans were predominantly given heel roles. Ono complained that WCW never had any minority writers. Which, again, there's a shock. We've got then one last little update on two well-known figures in WCW. WCW and the big company are planning a publicity campaign to build for Goldberg's return in April. The plan originally had been for Vicious to be portrayed as a dominating champion, go heel, and lose the title to Goldberg. The plan was then given to turn as many hot baby faces as possible heel and feed them to Goldberg. My God. So not like have him run through any of our heels and then turn them baby faces.
Turn all your baby faces. Like,
let's kill all our baby faces. Turn them heel, feed them to Goldberg, and then leave them astray.
Dave, before you go on, what baby faces?
Well, this immediately in my head, I'm just like, fuck, Booker was definitely on that list.
Like, who's their Sid?
You know, you'd have to, we'll say it, we'll talk about it on this show, but you'd have to say, like, and it's more a statement on everybody else than him, that Vampiro is probably high.
Yes, I was waiting for you to see if you'd go Vampiro second, because
Sting, he's
the second most prominent babyface at the moment.
Sting.
Sting, yeah.
And now, and then, like I said, Booker. But Hogan. Like Booker is not being pushed as a big deal. Yeah, Hogan, but they're not. Like, I assume that this is not including Hogan. Like, he's not getting fed to Goldberg. Are you joking me? Actually, funnily enough, let's go to the next sentence. The big question right now regards Hogan. Hogan going heel at this point could be a career killer. And Sting going heel against Goldberg is even more likely to be a career killer, seeing as he's close to dead anyway.
Wow.
And the feeling is he won't go over the scenario, since the end result is him having to put Goldberg over clean if it's done right. That's not going to work for him, brother. The debate seems to be whether to debut Goldberg on the pay-per-view on 4/16 or on the Nitro on 4/17, with the feeling that maybe leaning towards Nitro because nobody is watching the pay-per-views right now. And then our final update on somebody allegedly returning. Bill Bush got the word this past week that Bret Hart would be back in July at the earliest. Hart received notice that as of 2/16, his pay was cut in half, and that as of 4/15, he can be fired. Bush told Hart that he had no idea his pay was cut, and that it was something that was done by the legal department, and that they'd work it out when Hart comes back. The Winnipeg Sun had a lengthy article on Hart's condition, saying he doesn't remember what he did on Christmas or New Year's. He said it's been harder on him that some people close to him don't believe he's really injured than actually missing the wrestling. Hart also asked about Marty McSorley's incident where he hit Donald Brashear in the head with a hockey stick, and said that he thought it was negligent and it's pretty damn close whether or not the cops should get involved. What am I looking at here? Oh yeah, the last bit. There is consideration being given to linking Sting and Vampiro as a team, with the idea that it would elevate Vampiro and perhaps freshen up Sting. The question again involves whether Sting would see teaming with a guy that at this point has no credibility, but is starting to get over as a demotion and nix it. So just all interesting points going forward. I don't think Brett is seen on TV until the finish of Russo's Revenge.
Yep.
And is he ever seen again after that? Maybe once or twice.
Once.
Yeah.
But he doesn't wrestle again.
No, he doesn't wrestle again. He comes in, he screws, is it Goldberg? He screws Goldberg.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and Nash wins.
Yeah.
Sorry for spoilers for Russo's Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, interesting. I think it is interesting to see where they're already thinking about the link between Vampiro and Sting, which I think would happen.
They've been thinking about that for weeks. Do you remember when they went Sting and Vampiro? Sting is like Vampiro. Vampiro's like Sting. Do you like Vampiro? Because Sting likes Vampiro.
Shall we get into it, buddy?
Let's get into 103.
This is Thunder 103 from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 8th of March 2000, with a 1.9 rating, which is down by 0.1. We get no cold open straight into our new terrible butt rock opening, and I will keep giving out about the new opening to Thunder because it is. It's one of the things, there's a lot of things I'm getting clearer and clearer memories of watching the first time around when I was a kid, but I'll tell you what, I completely memory hold this new version of the Thunder intro.
I mean, it's not memorable at all, so why would you remember it as a child?
Now, I will say, in the greatest lie Mike Tenay has maybe ever told us, is that tonight we will get the answers to many questions that people are having about what's going on in WCW right now, which we would not. We open straight away with a cruiserweight title match as the Flatpak Sovereign himself, the artist formerly known as Prince IKEA, takes on a man we have not seen wrestle for quite a while on this podcast, Psicosis.
That's since the cruiserweight tournament that he was in and then not in and then back in again.
And he's accompanied by Hoovy. Have you noticed that the last little while IKEA seems to be settling into what I would call the Orange Cassidy role on the show, but with far less justification? Like, I can't imagine they're looking at big data in WCW at the time to go, oh yeah, he's popping a rating at the start. But remember, there was that, like, I'd say it was the guts of a year where, like, Orange Cassidy opened every Dynamite because he was popping a rating.
They've been pretty consistent with Taff Cappy since the Cruiserweight tournament. They've been giving him that, I won't call it a massive push, but
he's most consistently featured, consistently booked, and he's like, he's been mostly winning.
Yes.
You know, whether by shenanigans, banana peel or whatever, still winning. He's one of the better booked. Now, our problem is he's awful.
He's not a good wrestler, but I do like the act.
Yeah. Again, I think we said it before, haven't we? That if the act was given to somebody with even like a scintilla of charisma, it probably would have gone like hog wild crazy over. But the fact that it is getting over, and this is how I remember, again, from my childhood, this is how I remember Prince IKEA.
Like, how over is a Prince tribute act going to get in the year 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, like, I can tell you from 10, 11-year-old me watching this, I had no fucking clue what almost any of this was in reference to.
I was probably aware of Prince, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
Tuned into Prince.
Because they would have, if you remember, they did the re-release of Tonight We're on a Party Like It's 1999 in 1999. Yeah, that was probably the first time Prince came across my radar growing up. Yeah, and then like a lot of cultural references to him being referred to by a symbol or as the artist formerly known as. Mm-hmm. He's one of those pop culture figures that, because he came slightly before yours and mine time, we at first mostly consumed him through references to him in other things.
Through a meme almost.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It was like this mimetic distillation of, like, we had a summation of who this guy was before we ever actually listened to Purple Rain or anything.
This guy went off and made weird movies with all his fucking bandmates and
so, like I said, I don't think there's any data going into making this. I think it's just vibes. Tonight tells us it'll be three title matches on this card. They show us a flashback that Prince basically tried to fuck with Hoovy and Psicosis' business on Monday, that they battered him. I wrote, the juice comes out just rambling his hole off, and then attempts to ambush his way onto commentary while talking about Living La Vida Loca, in case you were wondering what year this program was broadcast in.
He says Living La Vida Loca at least four times.
Mm-hmm. Tanae says, I think we have something better than the juice. And then Ray comes out. I gotta tell you, I did pop. But then, like, again, I think before he even came out and before he basically said it and took the air out of the balloon, I was like, wait, this timeline doesn't match
up. No, it doesn't match up at all.
It doesn't match up. Like, he's not back.
No. That's what when I saw him, I was like, have I memory hold a Rey Mysterio commentary role or something? Like, what the fuck is he doing here?
Yeah, and I just wrote, what? And it makes so much sense that, like, well, it doesn't make sense why they thought it, but it makes so much sense that they would book him for a segment on TV if they thought he was back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's totally on them how they thought he was back when he definitely wasn't. But anyway.
It also makes sense of the mention he got last week.
Yes. Yeah. They were setting up for a return that's not happening until the summer. Because, like, almost immediately, well, firstly, I did laugh at, like, Brain trying so hard to be in the heel commentary role. Because there's no way, this is, like, the least sincere thing he's ever said when, Brain goes, I'd prefer Hoovy than Ray out here. Tanae goes, speak for yourself. And he just goes, I am. Which I thought was really good. Like, who else do you think I'm speaking for, you fucking idiots? But like almost immediately, and like Ray and Ferris, it's probably like he knows. He's just like, okay, I need to say this straight away before people get too excited. He just goes, yeah, I'm still like 3 months away from coming back.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up here, kids.
Yeah. But he says, when I come back, I want a shot at that title and I deserve a shot at that title. I'd love to be able to recap the action in this match, Lee, but one, it was dull. And two, the camera, the director was more obsessed with Hoovy trying to come on to Paisley than anything that was going on in the ring for quite a period of time here.
Psycho did get a visual roll up or visual pin on
Prince. He did. I will say he looked good. This is why, like, we're reminded we were saber rattling for him the whole way through the first couple of years of this show. Yeah. Like, here's a guy that should be in the Orange Cassidy roles. You put Psychosis out there against anyone in this division, and he's going to make them look good. And this is about the most capable you're going to see Prince looking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, he gets a visual pin in on him, so it's not like, you know, it's not nothing, but it's still kind of like, ugh. I didn't want them to get fed to him. This should have been one of those. I would have loved this if this was he actually pinned the champion in a non-title match and set himself up. That's one of those, like,
yeah, this is the problem with the untitled. Like, every time it's a champion, like, it's always a title match.
Yeah. I will say Ray as well. God bless him. One of the greatest to ever do it. Should never have a live microphone.
Oh, God, no. Even now,
less than nothing on commentary. Yeah. So Prince gets caught in a hold. I think it's like a surfboard or something. Like, he gets caught in something anyway, and he gets bonked into Robinson. Roll up while the ref is, but the roll up you spoke of happens when the ref is bumped. Hoovy counts to three. They celebrate. Charles wakes up, corrects the score, and it was a disqualification was the actual official finish in this match. Off to a bad start, because you are basically in your very first match on the show making the crowd mad at your booking.
I mean, were they mad?
I mean, it did feel a little like, okay, mad might be a bit of a stretch, but it felt like they thought they saw something remotely interesting and then were told, no.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You didn't see that.
Yeah, maybe you were mad for that, but yeah. I still don't think people care about the artist.
And they shouldn't. They show some of the upcoming matches on the show, and let me tell you, some of the graphic renders they have for these guys, horrendous. Horrendous. Like, these are guys, like, it's not like, okay, at this time and with technology, I would understand if a load of these guys you were showing graphics of, it's like their first night in the promotion and you haven't had a chance to get the official company photographer to take like good high-res photos of them to use in your graphics. But like, this is all dudes they've had for months, if not years, on the roster. Yep. And like, all the photos are completely inconsistent in terms of lighting, angle, how the images are stretched to cover the area. Mm-hmm. It's fucking a bit, it, like, it's proper graphic design is my passion stuff. We do get a line in here as well about how the Harrises were recently bailed out of jail.
Yeah, probably should have left them there.
Yeah. Bam Bam backstage apologizing to Gormbar. The two of them are in neck braces after last week's attack. More on that later. Lex backstage telling Flair that Arn is dead weight and he stuck her nose in their business. And Flair said, I will deliver Arn to you to team package tonight. Next up, Lee, let us sound the preposterous sarcophagus klaxon as the demon takes on Idol. And as if the special main event at the pay-per-view wasn't enough of a fall from grace or a burial, as if the idea of just having to wrestle Idol in a competitive match on a Thunder wasn't enough of a fall from grace or a burial, this fucker gets stuck in the casket during his entrance, right?
Is it a bit now?
I don't, this is the thing, right? I don't know what's worse, right? So there's one idea is like, this is becoming a Shockmaster level bit. Right? So that's one option and that's bad. The other option is he genuinely got stuck. And their response to this is instead of to cut away to the ring or like the crowd shot while they figured it out, they held the shot at the sarcophagus and they started talking about it on commentary.
On a tape show.
Yeah. But what's really funny, like especially funny about it is they had a video package ready to play. Because like as soon as he gets out, they cut to the package.
They cut to a package, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Holy shit. Like, so this is like whether he genuinely got stuck or not, definitely the mission statement is bury him.
I think it's a bit at this point because this is not the first time they've had the coffin stick.
Yeah.
And plus, like, he's in a comedy team at Norman taking on Lane and Idol, like.
Yes. Lane joins commentary. He calls Miss Hancock a Rizat as she comes out, which cool. He pretends to help her onto the table and then escorts her out. Remind me, Lee, have we so she started the dancing gimmick on the table?
No, it's not happened on Thunder yet.
That's what I mean. Like this is like the second time she's teased doing it on Thunder. Mm-hmm. But she hasn't actually done it on Thunder yet.
Yeah, she only likes dancing for Tony, apparently.
Yeah. But the show that gets the bigger ratings, they'll do it on. And like marginally bigger ratings at this stage.
Yes, it's not a huge difference anymore.
Yes.
Here's a wild thought.
Okay.
Idol didn't look awful in this match.
No, I didn't think so. And look, it takes a lot to carry the demon to something that isn't like hugely embarrassing. So fair play, but like I don't think either of us really ever had like all our beef that we may have had with Lenny Lane or with Lodi back in the day. I don't think any of it really was based on Indian ring.
No, to be fair, no, it's not. I was just kind of like, we don't often see Lodi Idol
actually get time,
to have a match.
Yeah, he usually, like, when he was with Raven, he was just, like, he was just getting bumped around on the outside. Yeah. So Demon gets distracted by all the stuff going on with Lane and Miss Hancock. Gets jumped by Idol, he puts a beating on him. Snap suplex, parrot slam for two, DDT. And Hancock is back on the apron, beckoning Idol over, makes out with him. Demon hits his move and wins. Then Lane hits Miz, obviously watching his Lane tapes back in the day, hits the skull crushing finale.
Do you know what he calls it?
The trip down memory lane.
Yes. Great name.
Much better than skull crushing finale. Another DDT, Norman comes out, clotheslines, wiggle, hits his awesome wind up scoop slam. Then he gets attacked by Lane while he hits a big wiggle. And then Lane hits him what can only be described, Lee, as a flying arse.
Yeah, that's definitely the only way you could describe that move.
Hennig backstage, he's mad at Luger, calls him a cheap-shotting bodybuilder, and he will make this all right. Bam Bam is upset, and he's coming out. Now we reach our first diversion point of the night.
Can I just say, just after having back-to-back segments with Kurt Hennig and Bam Bam Bigelow, This roster is old as fuck.
Yeah, washed, man. Now, what I'm going to say is I will describe this as a segment of two halves. Because I didn't care for this at the start until the wall arrived, okay? And my one, I suppose, quibble, and to be consistent with last week, that I will say, and this is maybe where your angle at it comes on, but I will give you your chance to air your grievances or not with this segment after, is we really loved the him wiping out Crowbar and Flair last week. Mm-hmm. They should have stayed off TV.
Yes.
Absolutely priority one. We knew, even saying it at the time, that they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the second half of this segment, given that they had already made the decision to put these two guys on TV the week after, I enjoyed a lot, but we'll get to it in a second, okay? So, Bam Bam comes out. We see a replay of him having a disagreement with the wall, who, again, my best description for this is the wall slapped him through a table. So he slapped him across the face and he fell off like the second step of a set of stairs and fell onto a table that, like, I am the table, and he just fell off it. He calls out Gormbar, describing them as two of the toughest SOBs in the company, which I think says more about the company than it does about them. I had written that, like, even though I wish they were off TV, I'm actually surprised that they were even selling the injuries from last week. I thought they'd just come out fine. I, like, for the first few seconds, I thought they were going to show a replay that something else had happened to them on Monday. Because, like, no way are they holding that, it's selling for a week. Mm-hmm. No way. In a company this inconsistent. Bam Bam, by the way, I think on 2 to 3 occasions refers to Crowbar as Cobar. Bam Bam says he's lucky to be alive, as is Gormless Idiot David Flair. Bam Bam feels bad because in... You want to talk about, like, a really trying to do a lore drop after the fact. It just smacked of one of those. We're trying to put stakes into this angle and history into this angle to make people care, even though they already have decided they don't. He said, "You should all know I broke the wall into this business and I brought him to WCW, and he's the godfather of my youngest daughter." It's like, this is all stuff never been mentioned before,
no.
Never been referred to before. These two had no history, never interacted before that slap through the table, as far as we know.
So how did the silent supposed German man become Bam Bam's daughter's godfather?
You tell me, mate.
Yeah.
Bam Bam gets on bended knee to apologize. And this is when I start enjoying things.
Okay.
As the wall's music starts to play.
Did he have music? I just walked out.
No, it was the doom, doom, doom has started. That,
okay.
That's the wall brother music.
Yeah.
Commentary says they're helpless. They can't do a thing. And so this is great for two reasons. One, we've talked about it before. One of the funniest tropes in wrestling is people trapped in a wrestling ring. Right? Love it. Brilliant.
Yeah,
dumb as shit. Yeah, can't get out of the wrestling ring. Bobby Heenan, his line of the night, when I think it's Tanae says, they're helpless, they can't do a thing. Little bit of pause, Brain goes, they couldn't even do a thing when they were healthy, though. Then Wall gets in the ring and fucking lays waste all of them. He boots Crowbar clean out of the fucking chair, which ruled. Like, yeah. He just hit a big boot on Crowbar, fucking hurtles backwards across the ring and wipes out on the floor.
Now, to be fair, I think you're almost doing an injustice, because he gets in the ring and he takes the mic from Bam Bam like he's about to speak and then just decks him.
Again.
And then he turns his attention. The two lads are just kind of sat on their chairs and unable to move.
Crowbar sells this like he got shot with a shotgun through the chest. And yeah, the other two guys are frozen in horror.
A John Woo boot.
Yeah. Bam Bam gets choke slammed off the apron through a table, tears the neck brace off David, then tears it off Crowbar. He fucking spikes Crowbar with a choke slam.
Mm-hmm.
Then choke pushes Flair off the apron onto Bam. And then my favorite part is as he's walking off, we hear the first ever utterance from the wall where he just says, "Weak." So it ended on the least impressive spot with that choke push, but I thought from the moment Wall's music started playing, this segment ruled. Whereas, like, okay, if you're finally deciding to push the wall, he should not be trifling with these three. They should not be giving him a moment's issue. He should be coming in and wiping these cunts out without breaking a sweat and then walking away disappointed that they didn't fight
back.
Calling
them weak, yeah.
Yes. That part is perfect. Everything up to it and the fucking Bam Bam lore drop, dreadful. But then it fucking ruled. Just give me a fucking large man beating the tar out of these fucking dweebs. And
see,
I'm happy.
I thought it was fine. Like, you know, I could do without, as you mentioned, the lore drop. I could do without the backstory. But yeah, no, him coming in and beating up the beating up Gombar is like, yeah, definitely well worth watching and a highlight of this show. But where I take issue with what you had said is that it's one of the best things we've seen on Thunder in many, 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 many months.
I will still stand by that. I'd say it's in the top 10 Thunder segments of the last 6 months. Name for me, right? Okay, I think number one with a bullet is Wall killing the boat last week.
Yes.
Right? That's one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Right?
That was
where
phenomenal,
they were doing
a
full own voice on Crowbar being hauled off. Like, the only thing that would be better is if they hauled him off in the sarcophagus, the demon sarcophagus, because he'd simply been killed. Right? if that was how they did it, fucking perfect segment, new boom period for this company. Brilliant, right? That's number one. I challenge you to tell me what the other, like, you need to go up with 9 segments to push this one out. Like, it is, I will grant you, it's a little bit, it's in the top 10 or maybe even top 5 by default.
Yeah.
But I do believe I'm technically correct that this is like the second half of this segment is one of the 10 best things we've seen in months. We've been going through a pretty fucking bad period.
What month are we in? We're in March of 2000. Sorry, talking back to September 99.
Yeah. So what I'll say is the three I'm putting in there are that segment from last week, this segment, and then there's a promo later, which I really liked, right? I'm putting the three of those in. And I think the other 7 moments are 6 Sid beating someone down.
Yeah.
And then that one Tank Abbott, Jerry Flynn, where he just blacks the cunt.
Right. Yeah, see, we haven't had enough Tank Abbott recently. That's probably one of the issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, like I said, it was a good segment. I find it difficult to call it one of the best segments we've seen in X time.
Like, no wonder. I was super, like, when we've been watching The Wall since he debuted with Berlin, I remember Berlin and The Wall. I remember them not being together anymore. I didn't remember how bad the breakup was, right?
That's funny. That's how I remember the Berlin Wall as well.
I remember being really into The Wall, like, at age 11. I was like, why the fuck? Apart from the fact he's a huge cunt that chokeslams people, was I really into him age 11? I was like, if they just... It makes so much sense to me how some of these people... Because remember I talked about Vito as well, right?
Uh-huh.
And me really being into Vito at some point in 2000, 2001. And me being really into Chronic in 2000 as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because I will bet you anything, we're about to go into months of segments where the wall just comes out
people.
And beats the fucking piss out of people. And you know what? That is a perfect use of the wall.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
He shouldn't be wrestling. Fuck no. No, he should just come out and fucking lay waste. Do you know what he would have been perfect in if he came around 6 years later? The ECW Monster Mash Battle Royal. Like, if he had come out like fucking Godzilla wrecking Tokyo every week on TV, this guy would be world champion.
He'd have won the fucking ECW title instead of fucking Big Show.
Oh, 100%. He would have been pushed over Blaster Lashley. Remember that? Remember Blaster Lashley?
Yeah, I remember Blaster Lashley.
Anyway.
Let's not talk too much about that.
How fucking weird was this Hogan promo, by the way? They showed us a Hogan promo where he was just basically covered in straps.
Well,
lost his fucking mind.
This is what? Week 3 of Hogan pre-tapes?
Yeah.
All shot on the same day, obviously. Yeah, it's just weird, man. This whole era of Hogan is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I'm thankful he comes back because we wouldn't get the fucking colossal shit show that is Bash at the Beach 2000 if he had just walked on the company when he left last time.
Dreading that episode, honestly.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it, mate. Like, I have dug back out my copy of WCW, my copy of Nitro. It'll be the most well-researched I've ever been when we cover that shit.
You might not even watch it.
The only thing is, right, and I've been thinking about this, and I know you're not going to be open to this, but I'm going to try and push it on you now, and hopefully Aaron Quinn will just bully you into doing it by now, by the time we get there. I think I will cover the Observer and the books and stuff like that. I think you should have to listen to the podcast clips where Bischoff and Russo talk about Bash at the Beach 2000 to give their perspective on it.
Does that exist?
No, no, not together, but I'm certain Bischoff has done podcasts talking about it. And like Vince Russo just can't shut the fuck up ever about anything and how nothing was his fault. So he has talked at length about it somewhere. I think he at least briefly talked about it in, very famously, he did a WrestleCrap interview with R.D. Reynolds.
Yeah, I was just going to say
15 years ago.
Hasn't he done so many interviews where he's contradicted himself at this point?
Oh, dude, I remember Browno, my buddy in school, like coming to me just going, man, like I listened to that WrestleCrap interview and man, Vince Russo, he sounds like this guy's just a victim of circumstance. And I was like, Vince Russo. I was like, I love RD, but I'm going to listen to this interview. And there's absolutely no way is he telling the truth at any point if you think he's coming out as the innocent party here. That's not for me to say that fucking like Hulk Hogan is, you know, in any way. It's we'll get to it at Bash of the Beach. Like, it's one of those situations where
we're not going to spoil it.
Everybody involved is a prick.
I love when you say we're not going to spoil it. Like, there hasn't been a fucking 9-hour podcast done about it before.
Oh, mate. Like I said, I think that is going to be our first two-parter. I think that's going to have to be our first two-parter.
Can we not do a two-parter on something interesting?
Well, I also think we should, and this is, again, this is very inside baseball, but if people are up for it, I think we should also pair it with us watching the Bash at the Beach Dark Side of the Ring on Patreon.
Oh, God.
Just make it a full
so much fucking Bash at the Beach 2000.
We will officially have the last word on Bash at the Beach 2000.
Here's the last word. They're all pricks.
Mate, look, if I had my way, we would be doing 6 months on Russo's Revenge War Games 2000. So count yourself lucky. We're getting away. Anyway.
Oh, God.
Let's talk about something that wasn't even remotely as interesting as just riffing on Bash of the Beach 2000, and that was the Maestro versus the Cat. I don't know what gradient to put the Stroh's hair on, but like he looks like every woman over 60 from Coronation Street. Like, I had him written down at various stages through here as Rita, Deirdre, Vera Duckworth, and Mavis for like the maybe your Mount Rushmore of old women from Coronation Street. Missing anyone from there who was like, were you a Coronation Street family?
What was her name with the Betty?
Betty.
Yeah. You'd be going back into the 80s then for anything.
Gail.
I don't think she. I don't know. I think I remember her having a short hair.
Well, she didn't have like the big kind of rinse.
Yeah, she, yeah.
Liz McDonald, big hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is a reference that will appeal to maybe half a dozen people listening to That's what we live to do. We serve the niche. We serve the niche over here.
Get in touch with us for your best memories of Coronation Street 80s. Here it is.
How would you book the Jez Quigley heel run in Coronation Street? Let us know in the comments. Cat immediately lays out Maestro once he's called out and lays the soft shoe in. Basically all Cat. And then there's a tug of war with Symphony over the stereo. Nick Patrick, by the way, you always thought I focused in on this about how like badly planned out a lot of these. Do you think, right? I was thinking about this and why this keeps happening with referees who have to pretend they're the dumbest people alive to miss interference, to miss weapon spots and stuff like that. I genuinely think part of it is, do you think whoever's producing these matches just isn't either telling the referees anything apart from the finish, or isn't filling in the referees enough to know, like, okay, we need to figure out, like, there's something going on here. Like, because, like, I'm actually starting to feel for the referees that they're having to act this dense.
I mean, how much of it is acting?
But, like, Nick Patrick isn't even being distracted here. Nick Patrick is just staring into the distance in the crowd.
He just looks away. It's not even in any way, shape, or form good. Like, I went on my big rant about referees and looking shit. Like, it's such WCW thing. It's so annoying. You just have to kind of...
Patreon member that week, I'll tell you.
You just have to get past it.
So, Cat Cave strows head in and wins. Then we get Vampiro throwing shit backstage. Then we get Vampiro again in the boiler room saying he feels like a rat in a cage. He's cutting a promo on Fit Finley, but then he said he's going to take Jarrett to hell tonight. Gene, weirdly in the dark with Lash. Like, what is with the lighting backstage tonight? I don't know. It's fucking all over the place. There's no, like, static interview position. It's whatever weird corridor they can find. Lash celebrating Mardi Gras says things haven't gone well lately for him in the ring, but he's happy to be here and he'll do anything for the fans. And he is immediately ambushed by Dustin Rhodes, who beats the shit out of him all the way to the ring, and the bell rings. So that sets up Lash LaRue versus Dustin Rhodes. Crossbody by Lash for two. Big back body drop and then 10 punches. Gets low blowed. Back suplex drop. Hard whip into the corner. And Dustin hits the bulldog and wins. Then we get one of the stranger post-match angles I've seen lately. Now, what I'm about to describe to you, listener, Lee will verify as actually having happened.
No, hang on.
Okay.
I just want to set the scene.
Okay. Do you remember when... read out here that beggars belief, but go on.
Do you remember when Cody challenged Roman for the title and lost?
Yes.
And what happened in the aftermath while Cody was sat in the ring? It was a meme for a good nine months to a year.
Yeah.
Well, this was what, like, this is like a real life version of that, because while that Rhodes at WrestleMania was attacked by a rubber chicken, this Rhodes was in fact hit with a real chicken.
So Terry Funk comes out.
Terry Funk, the human rotisserie.
Terry Funk comes out. And I'm being very literal here when I say Terry Funk came out and put his hand up a chicken's arse. That's just what happened. That is just what happened. I am not editorializing. Terry Funk came out and put his hand up a chicken's arse. And then he punched Dustin in the head with his chicken arse hand.
He wore that chicken like it was owning money.
Dustin no sells the shot with the chicken and then beats on Funk with the chicken. And then they bail outside and brawl into the crowd. Now, I'm going to have to say as well, this was not a cooked-looking chicken. Genuinely, the salmonella risk may be more dangerous than any spot we've seen in WCW history.
You also forgot that Dustin dropped an elbow on the chicken.
Yes, he did. Which, okay, that got a bonus star rating for this. Mm-hmm. That was good. Okay, team package are on their way out. Maybe this time around, could I get maybe a soupçon of how you felt? Like, I have the details, so you don't need to go into the play-by-play on this.
Mm-hmm.
What did you... When I told you that I really loved this promo, What did you think?
I know we both really like Arn. But, you know, it's really difficult to dislike Arn. But, I feel like I've been much higher on Team Package than you have in recent times.
This is the first Team Package thing I've enjoyed.
Because I've just been in on the Package being this big dumb idiot that just kind of somehow flukes his way into good positions.
Yeah.
I don't love the idea that Ric Flair is somewhat subservient to him. Mm-hmm. I do like that Arn pointed that out.
This is what I love about this segment.
I was just going to say, but it feels like they were trying to recapture the magic of, like, you know, those kind of 97, 98 Ric Flair and Arn Anderson promos.
Mm.
And I know that we've had this before where Arn is trying to talk Rick around on something. I think we've had it with the Funk feud.
Yeah.
And I think we had it previous. Oh, yeah, when Rick was present.
Yeah.
So, like, this is at least the third time we've seen Arn trying to talk sense to Flair.
Yeah.
And this is probably the best of the bunch.
Uh-huh.
No disputing that. It's just hard for me to get too excited about it.
What I like about it was exactly what you just said, that like it one, it's the best of these Flair and Arn odds with each other.
Mm.
I think, look, I'm not somebody that needs like dense lore to my wrestling. Like, wrestling's pretty simple and you should mostly keep it simple. I don't need a huge amount of layers, but the fact that like this segment, and we'll get into it now, showed that there was at least a layer to the Arn character and the Flair character of now, because one of the things about the two of them being at odds with each other those previous times that you mentioned is they were just at odds with each other because like somebody in booking was like, I don't know, they're at odds with each other is how it felt. And like this Team Package thing, one of the reasons it's not hitting home for me this whole time, apart from like Lex sucks, is where it's like this just felt so thrown together because it's two guys we don't know what to do with right now, mm-hmm. right? And this gave some interesting, and it attempted as best it could, like it's not a miracle work of a segment, it attempted as best it could to incorporate some of the fucking weird booking that was going on during that Flair heel run last year with like the David stuff and things like that. But I'll get into it now, right? So Flair wants Arn out, and Flair literally names from second one as like, I want you subservient to me one more time for an apology. Mm. Arn comes out. Arn has a great line at the very start where he says, maybe I've stood beside you so long, I forgot to stand up to you. I am subservient to no one. Flair says, please, like, so one of the things I like about this is like Flair, again, is somebody that doesn't really have, in this, particularly in this period of time, I would hear an argument forever, like he doesn't have any volume or intensity settings between 0 and 10. It's one or the other. One of the things I liked about this segment was the gradually increasing desperation as he was realizing this was getting away from him and that Arn wasn't going to come over. The increasing desperation that like, I'm looking bad in front of Package. I'm not delivering on what I thought, and my best friend is also refusing to stand with me. The increasing desperation I really, really liked. But anyway, Flair says, come over here and do what I say. Don't make a fool out of me. Says, I'm going to tell you now, Rick, a few things you will not like. Monday night had marked 21 years of gormlessness, as I had written. So David turned 21 on Monday. He says, that may not matter to you. He has all the best things in the world. And then this is one of those times where like sometimes when you blur the lines, things get like a little bit interesting. And I think this did, where he says like, you and I have not been good fathers and husbands because we were on this road together. You have a chance to be there for David like I never was for my son, because he's on the road with you now. He basically got killed twice this week and you did nothing. Imagine the pressure that kid is under to have to fill your shoes. I'm standing up to you because he can't. Lex is one of the finest wrestlers alive, which made me laugh very loudly. But Luger only cares about Luger. He goes, did you ever think about why it's not Team Flair? And then a good line in here as well is, don't give David a handout. Give him a hand up. Go be a father. And I do like, there is that kind of like, you see it a lot in real life and in fiction as well. That thing of like the deadbeat dad who's still like extremely prideful, that like they suddenly get defensive about it being pointed out to them. Things they know to be true about not being a good father. So like he gets quite indignant about it and said, like, these people here don't need to hear about our private lives. He said, you chose to go home and that's fine. I respected that. I want to fly jets. I want to hang with Luger. I want to stay all out all night. I have four kids. I'm done being dad. And I was just like, and then the other one. So like, I like that because it was just like, it's very revealing about actually Richard Flair, the man. Mm-hmm. But then the one line in here that I think like gave a tone of like, there's real sadness to this, where he said like, I tried to slow down and this company kicked my ass. And there is like that hollow sadness to the idea. And again, like this is just, again, I'm reading too much into it. I know they didn't think that much about it, but it is interesting. Like the thought exercise of just like, he can't stop being Ric Flair. And that is true of the man. And like, you ever watch the 30 for 30 on him or know anything about like his life and stuff like that? It's like, he was Ric Flair for so long that he doesn't know how to be a normal person. And he can't stop, because when he stopped being Flair, everybody turned their back on him. You know what I mean? This company forgot about him when he wanted to slow down.
He now has to put
on the robe and be Ric Flair, the performing chimp for everybody.
That's an interesting angle to take. Like, if that was expanded on, because yeah, when Ric did try to be a father to Reed, he got sued.
Yeah. And I think it would be really, like I said, it would be really interesting to follow that thread.
To now,
watch, like, the anguish of like, I have to be Ric Flair because you're making me. You know what I mean? Not in the kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, inside baseball stuff. But the like, and even you add in the layer of insecurity. It's like, when I went home, the company forgot about me. And also I couldn't hack it as a dad. So I'm back here partly out of denial and partly because I'm being forced to being back. I just thought that was such a, may have been a throwaway line, you know, and I doubtless they will not follow this up in any satisfactory way. Do not get me wrong. But I just thought it was a fascinating and again, very revealing little bit about the man behind the gimmick, right? He said, Ric Flair, I have put my backpack on and I'm going to the top with package or by myself. David had the world by the ass for 21 years, which is a very strange turn of phrase. He needs to stand up and be a man. You're double A, my best friend. You're the enforcer. Come over and enforce. Aaron says, you're damn right I'm double A. And I love this bit as well from Aaron. You're damn right I'm double A. I have a couple of fights left in me, but I'm saving those. Back in my day, I would have walked over Luger to get to a better fight.
That was the best line.
That was so fucking, like, as the kids say that was fucking cold as shit. Like, that, he's basically saying is like, Flair, like, I have a couple of fights left in me, Ric. I am not letting you choose what those fights are.
Yeah.
You know? Luger says, I'm seeing Aaron's lips move, but all I'm hearing is gibberish. There's nothing here for us. Ric, this is two strikes. You get one more chance. You choose between me or you choose between Arn next week on Nitro when I end Kurt Hennig. Flair, now so desperate because he realizes his gravy train is leaving, says, you got to make this right by Monday to Arn. I've made it right by you your whole life. I want to be part of Team Package. Make it right. and Arn bails on him without saying anything. I just thought this was like, especially when you know the behind the scenes of like Flair mentally done with the company long before now, right? And it's just that little spark of like, fuck, like, you know, like he turned it on one more time and Arn turned it on one more time. And this was fucking cooking for this couple of minutes while it was happening. If it happened anywhere else in a company with any sort of instinct to go, there's fucking something here. You know what I mean? And if only, obviously, with Arn's health, like this was never going to lead to.
Oh no, Jesus no.
The payoff of like Arn avenging Angel coming, taking out Luger, wrestling Flair. The fuck me. It's like the Germer, we had that thing about like, who was it they were feuding with? Oh, it was it with the Elite? Team Taz were feuding with the Elite during the pandemic. And we were like, this is leading to a Taz versus Kenny Omega match that we're never going to fucking
never
get.
Gonna get it.
Never going to get it. Like, it looks like we were loving the dudes in Team Taz at the time, but we were just like, the match we wanted, we want to see Taz put in the Kata Hajime. Like, that's all we want. And we're we know we're never going to get it.
I think it was Taz and Cody. I think Taz and Cody were having promos. And
might well have been Taz and Cody. But I genuinely like, this is one of the rare times where I'll say like, actually go look up this segment because I thought it was phenomenal. And like, maybe it is, we're so beaten down by 2000 WCW. And even though I think like for most of 2026, I've largely been enjoying AEW TV, I don't think I've seen a promo this year that was as interesting to me. Because I think they're becoming a better angle company, but there's less. Do you remember it used to be like every week on Dynamite or Collision, there was a promo you were talking about for days afterwards. Yeah. The only one I can think of in 2026 that I've talked about for more than a day afterwards was Tekla's, you must be one of the dumbest bitches alive. That's the only promo line from 2026 I've thought about for any length of time.
Listen, Tekla rocks, so I'll take that.
Tekla rules, man.
Very happy to have been on the Tekla train early.
Great angle.
Now look, like I say, just because I didn't praise it to the hilltops, I think you thought I was going to, you know, be much more negative. I'm not. It was a good segment.
Yeah. I think maybe sometimes with us, I'm not saying this is you right now, but I think sometimes because we know for a fact these things don't lead to anything fun.
Yeah.
I don't think we let ourselves get swept up.
It's hard.
I'm trying with this very hard to be just like, just take it for what it was as a segment. But again, like I did with The Wall this week, where I'm like, we knew it was WCW. They weren't going to write these guys off TV for like 6 months like they should have. Enjoyed the moment of him wiping those cunts out. And that's what I tried to do with this. Like, just enjoy this while it lasts, because it will not happen again.
When we get to that reboot Nitro, then I'll come alive.
Yeah, yeah. And then be very swiftly killed again.
Yeah, then be very sad afterwards.
Anyway, moving on. Vampiro viciously attacks Finley backstage. And look, one thing I will say, even though I think you're worrying about the angle after tonight, I think you should be focusing more on Jarrett's stuff tonight for Vampiro, especially because it's Thunder. Pull aparts always work.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Tried and true. So fair enough. Liz and Lex getting into the limo. She asks him if that's how Lex imagined it playing out, if that's how he wanted it to play out. And he says, damn right. So next up is Fit Finley versus Meng. Can I recommend that Meng always hits a big boot on the camera while he's on the ramp? That was hilarious. We went from the best thing involving Team Package to the worst, because the worst thing involving anything in WCW in a while, which is the mention that there will be a Lumberjack cast match at the pay-per-view.
Yep.
So Sting is going to be... It's Sting and Lex, isn't it?
Yes, Sting and Lex.
Yeah, Sting and Lex, and everybody in the ring is going to be the people that had their arms broken. So, yes, like, which also, by the way, emphasizes how much they've overdone that one bit.
I think
they've done it enough to have enough people around ringside. I think they had this plan for...
Oh, they reverse engineered. They wanted a lumberjack match, so they need to start getting the bodies.
Basically. But I think they did it all too early because everyone has had these casts on for about 6 weeks at this point.
Fucking ridiculous. Fucking ridiculous. I have nothing.
The match starts and Tank Abbott walks out.
Yeah. Now, I will say, I did enjoy him, Meng, and Finley beating up a small army of security guards.
Yeah, that was weird.
Dillinger Corps took a hell of a beating here.
Apparently, Ming is in a feud with Tank. Tank just walks out, and the three of them just stop and start beating up security separately.
Can I say, is Doug Dillinger going to be one of the Lumberjacks?
I don't think he was.
As he should be.
I mean, Doug Dillinger should be a lot of things.
Should get a competent security person.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
We get a flashback to Kidman accidentally hitting Booker last week. Cut to Booker lecturing Tori about how Kidman needs to stay focused. So fucking overdoing the bit. So fucking overdoing the bit. Mamalukes are interviewed. Disco, ever the idiot, says he's booked them in a Four Corners tag team title match next just to prove how tough they are. So it's a Four Corners elimination match. The Mamalukes, Kidman and Booker, Harlem Heat 2000, and the Racism Brothers. So the match starts with only two of the teams present, which is always a good start. You know they're short for time. The Mamalukes and the Harris Brothers. Harlem Heat absolutely fucking stroll out to the ring, by the way.
They're not getting paid by the bump, Dave. I'll tell you that much.
I guess, especially Stevie. Booker and Kidman again overdoing the bit, enter separately. Harlem Heat 2000 get eliminated first. Stevie absolutely fuming.
Fuming. He takes a side rush leg sweep, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good one.
You want to talk about like how fucking what an afterthought these guys are at the moment. We come back from break and Booker T and Kidman were eliminated during the break.
On a tape show.
On a tape show. And they show a replay where Booker accidentally sidekicked Kidman. Kidman eats a H-bomb. Down to Harris's and the Mamalukes. Harris's double team Johnny as Robinson argues with Vito outside. Vito does a hot tag, clears house, goes up top. Elbow drop. Other Harris makes the save. H-bomb. Disco runs in. Clobbers him with the belt. And Johnny makes the cover. The Harrises get big mad. They clear out the Mamalukes and H-bomb Disco. And let me tell you, there are very few joys that Bobby the Brain Heenan has left in life in WCW, but calling the H-bomb spot is one of them, where he just like goes from 0 to 60. I'm like, H-bomb, sir! It's great. I'm glad he enjoys it, because I think it's a shitty finish.
I mean, it's not good.
No.
Also, you know, H-bomb.
The H-bomb as a maneuver is something I would do while fake wrestling my 1-year-old son. Like, you know what I mean? It does not hurt one bit.
Speaking of which,
I recently assaulted a child.
Speaking of which, my 30-year-old son has a habit of playing around with my 4-year-old daughter.
Okay.
And, you know, they will mess around and...
Hit her with a poisoned rana.
Well, he'll throw her onto the bed, you know, and say powerbomb or whatever.
Yeah.
My 4-year-old daughter was playing... Well, not playing. She was washing the dishes with her mom the other day.
Yeah.
And I came home from work to be informed that, you know, she washed the dishes and, you know, Jen said to me, "And what do you think she was saying?" I was like, "I don't know. She was picking up the cutlery and slamming him down and going, powerbomb!"
Now, where I thought that was going to go in my head, that the sitcom version of your life is that your daughter has a comically large pile of dishes and she turns around and your son super kicks her. And very much like when Sean super kicked Stan and the papers went flying in the air, just like these 20 plates went up into the sky.
Some reason my kitchen is a restaurant kitchen, just all of a sudden.
Yeah. A diner. Yeah.
No, my daughter has now adapted the term powerbomb.
Powerbomb the plates.
Yeah. So remember
she that. Into, has she started school yet, or she's in crash? She?
Yeah, crash.
Yeah. So, like, is she going into crash, like, powerbombing toddlers?
Well, if we were informed that she slapped somebody today, so.
She's been watching her Stephanie McMahon tapes.
Oh, God. yeah. Kids.
Oh, fun. Being parents is gas, isn't it?
Hang on, I'm just looking at my notes, and one of the next segments says DDP segment. I have no memory of this.
It's the ad for the book.
Oh, that's what it was.
Which you can buy for $24.95. And it's also a clip of him on Craig Kilborn.
I thought you were going to say a clip of him on Craig's list.
Now, I will say, just reeling back a little bit, Gene backstage admonishing how disappointed he is in Harlem Heat. Stevie absolutely furious. And he wants Booker and Kidman out uncensored, and he's going to hurt somebody. But then we get the segment. So we had talked about it in The Observer last week about how there was that book commercial that aired to the live crowd on Nitro that they all laughed
at. They all laughed,
yeah. So we saw that. And then we get a vignette about, which seemed like a hit piece from Godfrey Jones of Rock Bottom, where it was like, Jeff Jarrett, is he the real chosen one? They call him Rowdy Roddy.
Oh, I was just going to say. Just to say. Yeah.
That's believed to give Jeff Jarrett sexual powers.
Jeff Jarrett used to wear braces over his nipples. Is that for some sexual powers?
Just try to grab some of that sweet can. Right, next up, we've got the Knobber with Gene. It says, three count, better get ready. He's going to beat their whole classroom up, which is a funny line. But I forgot they're doing this 3-on-1 at the pay-per-view. So fucking whoop-de-doo. Mm-hmm. United States heavyweight title match. It's Jeff Jarrett versus Vampiro in our main event.
But before we get into the Jeff Jarrett versus Vampiro, I know you have come up with the term Elka Boink.
Well, I didn't come up with that, but I will say I do use it frequently.
You do use it pretty much every time. Elka Boink.
That, I believe I first heard Bobby Heenan himself say it. It was either Bobby Heenan or Larry Zbysko on a very early Thunder. I heard call it the Elka Boink. Although Gary Kidney often requests I call it the acoustic equalizer.
Did you catch Tony Schiavone throwing in an Elka Boink on Revolution?
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't, but I recently learned, actually. But go on, tell me, what was the context?
It was a spot outside of the ring. It was like a heel was running around the ring and the face kind of stopped and came back the other direction.
Yeah.
And caught them, and Schiavone just goes, oh, Elka Boink.
I recently learned that there is a running bit between the football podcast Football Clichés and Excalibur.
I meant to say this to you off the air. Did you not notice?
There was something in the back of my mind about it. And then I was listening to one of last week's episodes where at Revolution, they had challenged many months ago for Excalibur to get the phrase, have a crack at.
Mm-hmm.
In, and he got it in on the pay-per-view.
Oh, did he? Okay.
They haven't set a new challenge for Excalibur, but like, it is long. It's great that like Excalibur doesn't acknowledge it.
That he just said,
We all know he does, like, because it's happened way too many times to be coincidental at this point.
Football hipster Excalibur.
Very good. By the way, if you're into your soccer, Football Clichés.
Very good podcast.
Incredible podcast. Like, especially like if you're like us, Lee, and the fortunes of our team we support are decidedly mixed at times. Mm. And that puts you off listening to match recap podcast, the standard football podcast. Football Clichés is perfect. It is perfect football content. I love it so much. That and another podcast, I actually have to recommend one to you off the air. So please another football related one, but we'll get to that off the air. We'll get to that off the air.
Main event.
Yes, Jeff Jarrett comes out, asked if the girls want to flash Vampiro. The crowd are definitely in favor. And for Heat, he dismisses them before they get. I'll tell you, Tylene in particular, very upset that she didn't get to whip the top off here in the main event.
You'd have to buy your copy of WoW magazine to see.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah, no shortage of places to see. No shortage. God bless Tylene. She didn't make it a scarce commodity.
No, no.
She was not going to let Jeff Jarrett tell her what to do.
Tylene, April Hunter.
Yeah.
Who was the other one? Pamela Paulshock.
I don't, yeah. Again, you're probably better, and this is not me doing the Lisa Pervert dick again, but as you were a couple of years older than me at this
yes,
point,
yeah.
I think you are better placed in 2000 to know. I knew that I quite enjoyed when Tori Wilson and Stacey Keibler were on my screen in WCW in 2000. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't, shall we say, quite grasped my appreciation for them at that point in life. Whereas, like, you know, a 13, 14 year old Lee Malone is there watching WCW on Bravo going, dearly. You know the old Vic Reeves like rubbing the knees when fucking Ulrika Johnson was on the stairs.
Oh fucking hell.
Anyway. This match is just fucking bollocks. Like, I don't know what to even like. It's just fucking interference.
This match has run-ins from the Harris brothers.
Yeah.
The Mamelukes.
Yeah.
A referee bump.
Yeah.
And a referee we've never seen before.
Yeah, yeah. Just a new referee spawns.
Like, where'd he come out of?
I have no idea.
And he doesn't stick around because I don't remember this guy.
We get an audio ref bump and a new ref, but then the new ref arguing with
yes.
Patrick. And then while that's all happening, we get Jeff hitting Vamp with a stroke and winning. And that's just it. Like, that's the end of the show.
Yeah, well, Vamp gets spray painted because, you know,
yes.
It's 1996 again.
Yes. No, but it's silver now. It's completely different. Completely different. It's a new group. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, Banksy.
Yeah. Anyway, that is the end of Thunder episode 103. Lee, do you want to give us your overall thoughts on the show and your winners and losers, please?
I think it was a mixed show. The in-ring action was not to like a good standard. Like it was probably average for what it's been recently. There was nothing, no really standout match. Nothing really had time to be a standout match. It was very Russo coded show where people just walked out within seconds of matches starting.
Yeah.
I think, and you know, it's been a running theme over the past couple of weeks. I do think they are trying with Vampiro. I think this is them actually, you know, trying to push Vampiro.
It's just their ability to try is very bad.
Yeah, the way they do it is just not the way I do it. Like, look, we can say it now. I think both of us would agree that Vamp should have won the title here.
Yeah. Even Dave in the Observer is saying, like, he's got no credibility yet, but he is starting to get over with the crowds. And as we have noted extensively over the last year and a half, people aren't getting over with crowds.
No. And, you know, Jarrett is already in or has been in a world title program for the past 3 months. He doesn't need the US title.
No.
So, yeah, I think this would have been an ideal place to get the title off of Jeff. But anyway, yeah, look, Vamp is the winner. Like, there was nobody. Well, Demon, I suppose the Demon of all the people on the show comes out worse,
yeah,
based on whether it's a rib or not that he gets caught in the coffin.
Hell, yeah.
But look, it wasn't an awful show. There was some bright spots.
Yeah, for sure. The finish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga has 7 matches on this show with 1 clean finish.
Oh God!
1 disqualification. 1 interference leading to a finish, and in my non-finishes for this week, I have listed 1 via no contest, 1 via makeout sesh, one via hi-fi rush to the head, and one via ref quarrel. Yeah. Finishes, this is like, as much as it wasn't one of the worst thunders we've ever seen, the finishes of this company are remain all over the fucking shop.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thanks for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. We shall be back on Patreon next week, on the free feed in 2 weeks. And until then, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.